Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing managing rental properties effectively.
Right, Joel, we are going to talk about rental properties. I've got maybe about 7 years worth of experience now. You've been managing your properties for about that same length of time, right?
I think it's almost 9 years at this point.
Oh, nice, man.
Yeah. Yeah, we've learned
a couple extra years on me.
Sometimes learned the hard way managing rental properties. But yeah, there's a lot to share because I think that is one of the reasons people avoid getting into rental properties is the managing game. They're like, oh, it's going to be a big pain. And tenant nightmare, tenant horror stories, those are the kind of things that make people say, yeah, that's not for me. And so I think that being able to manage a property effectively is so key. It's so clutch to making it actually not a breeze necessarily, but very, very manageable, very, very doable.
Much more approachable and a lot easier than people think it is. And our goal is that with this episode, a lot of individuals might consider real estate and even managing it themselves based on what we have to say today. So on that real estate and housing kind of conversation, let's talk about neighbor.com.
Oh, yeah. I saw this recently. Yeah. I don't know where it's been hiding or how I haven't seen it before, but it's this really interesting website where people can rent out a space in their home or like a driveway or a garage or a shed, anything. You can rent out just a portion of your home for storage, not like Airbnb for someone to come and like sleep there, but for someone to store their possessions or a car or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Well, you said Airbnb. It really is like Airbnb except for self-storage,
yeah.
Not for individuals looking for a little getaway for the weekend.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to stay in my shed for the weekend, but you might want to pack your stuff there.
It just depends on how nice your shed is, man. I had a nice shed after college when I was living up in North Carolina. When I was living in the woods, chopping my own wood for heat, we had this little shed and we got a couple couches from the local Goodwill, put them in there, and we would sit out there and smoke our pipes and cigars. It was a very rustic and of the earth period of time for me.
Well, I feel like when I saw this about neighbor.com, I was like, man, for our audience, there's like a twofold potential benefit. One is if you have an extra room or space in your attic or space in your shed, whatever that may be.
Or like your basement or your driveway even.
Yeah.
Like I saw that you could just rent out space on your driveway. So if you have an extra large driveway and maybe you've downsized cars recently, somebody can pay you to park their own car in your driveway.
Or their boat or something. Yeah.
Yes, which is crazy.
Yeah. So like there's that potential to make some money off of extra space you have hanging out in your life. And then also there's the potential for storing your own stuff in a much cheaper way than you would be able to with like a self-storage unit by going directly to a neighbor, to someone around the corner and using their space for a fraction of the price. So yeah, it could be a win-win either way you're looking at it.
Yeah, this is another one of those kind of fun gig economy ways that you can make money. I mean, that's the end of it that I like, is the idea of individuals out there thinking, okay, what spaces can I rent out? Like, you can also list a unpaved lot, which is basically like your backyard. And so I'm like, man, folks are going to get on there and think through, like, what am I not using? What do I already have? You know,
yeah.
Folks have resources that they have at their disposal that aren't necessarily making money. And that's one of the cool things about all these apps and technologies is that they're able to shut down these inefficiencies that exist. Why not use these resources that you have and put them to work?
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah, you can make an extra 50, 100, 200 bucks a month by renting out something that you're not even really using. So
obviously, on the homepage, there's like a lady and she's like, I make over $10,000 every single year. Maybe in her case, she has like acres of parking lot, maybe, where folks can just rent that out from her.
But 42 attics.
Like. Yeah. Exactly.
All right, lady, good job. Yeah, so that's you're probably not going to get that rich doing it, but it is a potential way to make some extra money.
Yeah, super cool. And we will link to that in our show notes for folks who are interested.
All right, Matt, let's get to the beer we're having on this episode. Today we're drinking a beer called Pog Basement IPA by Scofflaw Brewing. They're just around the corner from us in Atlanta. I love the name. I've always loved that name, Scofflaw.
Scofflaw.
Yeah.
They don't care.
Exactly. About not anything.
They're going to do whatever it is that they want to do.
Including brewing a delicious IPA like this. So, looking forward to having this one on the show.
Yeah, and I was actually surprised. I looked at our beer backlog, and I was surprised to see we've never had a Scofflaw beer on the show.
So it's time.
It is time. We're overdue, man.
Yeah. All right. So we'll give our thoughts on that one at the end of the episode. But for now, let's get on to the topic at hand. We're talking about managing rental properties effectively. And Matt, we have talked about rental properties a decent bit on this podcast. We've answered listener questions about buying rental properties. We've talked about how to find the right rental property, how to screen tenants, how to invest in real estate when you don't want to physically own a single family or multifamily home where you live, and more. Like we've run the gamut in a lot of ways.
Right.
But what we haven't talked about is the day-to-day of rental property management. So we're going to tackle that scintillating topic on today's episode. Everybody's been waiting like with bated breath for this episode, I think. But like we said, if you are somebody who's thought that you'll never own rental properties because they sound like too much work, listen to this episode. There's a reasonable chance at least it'll change your mind. I can't promise you that it will. But and then for other people, for current landlords, I think there are a lot of ways that you can change the way you're managing something, make it a little bit of a lighter load and a little more enjoyable at the same time.
Yeah. And another reason too that we want to pull our listeners into this conversation, man, is that like you and I, we have seen the impact of smart real estate investing in our own lives, right? In our own ability to have a little bit more freedom when it comes to, you know, our day jobs and being able to earn a little bit of passive income, quote unquote, passive income. It's not truly right. Passive, but it's a big deal in our lives. So we want our listeners to at least hear us talk about this a little bit because it's something that they can implement in their own lives. And managing specifically is the thing that people push back on, right? It seems like something that they don't want to do. I think most people avoid rental properties in large part because they've heard tenant horror stories. And that's something that most people don't want to put up with, right? I totally get it. I understand that aversion, but it doesn't have to be like that. There are systems that you can put in place to make it far more likely that you'll have a positive experience with your tenants while simultaneously making money every single month and building wealth. So we'll talk about property managers and, you know, even when hiring one might make sense for you. You don't even necessarily have to manage a rental property yourself, even though that's going to be the direction that we're going to steer folks towards. And we'll get to those reasons why later in this episode.
Yeah. So before we get to kind of managing a rental property, Matt, there are a few things that change the dynamics of managing a rental property. And the biggest one is getting good at finding great tenants. That's half the battle, really. When
Step
it comes
one,
to,
great tenants.
Exactly.
That's going to solve almost all of your problems.
Exactly. It really is huge. And you know, we covered that a while back in episode 44. But let's quickly discuss again, because getting stellar tenants into your property will make all the difference when it comes to managing that property. Let's talk about listings and showings. That's a huge part of whether people are going to respond or not. I mean, just like if you list a used item for sale on Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist, good pictures and a decent listing go a long way towards whether people are actually going to reach out to you or not and be interested in what you're selling and whether or not they're going to be willing to pay full price. I recently discussed the difference between listing on Facebook Marketplace, which is free, and then listing on Zillow, which costs $10 a week. And I had plenty of time, so I was like, I'm going to try the free out and go with Facebook. But Zillow kicked its butt. Like, I got zero replies from Facebook, and I got like 30 replies from Zillow within a week. And so, yeah.
Yeah, Facebook Marketplace, great for unloading a fridge for $100.
Right, right.
Maybe not the best place to
list an $1,800 rental.
Exactly. Man.
Yeah. So, put a sign in your yard, list it everywhere, take good pics, give solid info about the property, and make it professional and friendly while selling the features of the home and the neighborhood. I think sometimes if you skip that step or you're like, oh yeah, 2-1 available next week, well, you have to like sell the neighborhood a little bit, sell the home and let people know what a great place it is to live.
Yeah, you're talking about the neighborhood. Essentially, you want to paint a picture of what it's like to live there. In both of our cases, we've had properties that we've moved out of that we then listed. And it's really easy to get behind that property, right? Because there's reasons that you bought it in the first place. And so explaining how close it is to, say, like restaurants, you know? Like, I mean, I've got a property nearby that's about 5 blocks from some really great restaurants in Atlanta. That's something that you want to include in the listing. So it takes a little bit of creativity to help folks to understand what it's going to be like and how wonderful it truly is going to be to live in a property like that. And another important step to finding a great tenant is making sure that you properly run a background check. You want to check their credit and their criminal history. MySmartMove.com or Cozy.co, Cozy Co. these are the websites that we think are best for screening a potential tenant. And that part of the process is crucial. You know, it's really hard to get to know someone in 5 minutes when they swing by and take a look at the place and they say, hey, I want to apply for the place, right? And so make sure you can find out more about them based on their background check. And you also want to call previous landlords and verify their income and their employment. You know, I even call a couple of personal contacts as well if they include those, or better yet, if they include like a little letter of recommendation maybe from the previous landlord.
Yeah, that always helps.
Yeah, but always call. I feel like this is an easy step that a lot of individuals can overlook because like you meet somebody, you start talking, even these days, even wearing a mask, it can be awkward, but you start talking to them and you think, oh man, they seem so great. They're really friendly. They mention the company where they work. It sounds like they make enough and they qualify. However, just because they're friendly and do a good job socially doesn't mean they do a good job financially, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So you want to make sure that you thoroughly vet your applicants.
Yeah, really, it doesn't take that much time, you know, running these histories and then making 4 or 5 phone calls. There's not a whole lot involved. And yet what it can save you from, the pain on the back end of having someone who doesn't pay rent on time or gets months behind even. Like, those are the kind of things that are going to make you wish you never took on managing a rental property in the first place. And mm-hmm. So, yeah, we want to make sure you don't get into that spot. So do the easy stuff on the front end that takes a little bit of time in order to ensure that you're getting a great tenant. And also another important thing to consider is the lease agreement. Getting a thorough lease agreement is incredibly important. You can look to get one from a fellow real estate investor. That's actually what I did when I got started out. A friend across the street who had a few rental properties was like, all right, hey, I've been talking to you about this. Let me give you my lease. And I looked it over and it was great. But I would say for most people, it makes sense to actually pay for one that you can use over and over that works for the ways that the laws are set up in your state. Because sometimes you might get a lease from a friend and you don't realize that it's missing some important components that you need to have in there. Bigger Pockets sell state-specific leases for $99. Nolo allows you to make unlimited leases for $39 a year. You can also check out other online legal sites like LegalZoom. Be wary of going for the free forms, though. You don't want to cheap out on the lease because, like I said, you want to make sure it's a state-specific, thorough legal document. And that's just really important also on the front end, and it's worth that extra money in order to make sure that your legal obligations are taken care of.
Yeah, this is definitely an instance where you'd want to be frugal, but not cheap.
Yeah,
because it can come back to bite you. Man, this makes me think too of like, have you had any horror stories when it's come to your different properties? As you're talking about leases, I was kind of thinking through. Maybe I wasn't listening to you, and I was thinking through different instances, different occasions that have arisen. And I can honestly say, man, I've never really had a full-on horror story where something terrible has happened at a property, like where I needed to get up in the middle of the night. You know, you hear these different stories.
No, me neither.
Yeah, really? So the worst thing I can think of, maybe as you think of something to share, but at one of our properties, we had a giant tree branch fall and it landed on the car. Oh. It landed on the tenant's car. But like, this was a healthy tree, and this was back, I forget which hurricane it was, but a few years ago, it was a big hurricane in the fall. But it rocked, you know, the Atlanta area, and a lot of trees went down. And luckily, our tenants had comprehensive coverage. You know, it covered those acts of God, you know, weather, things that you can't really plan for. But, you know, that was something where I was just like, oh, no, what's going to happen? But it's like, oh, no, that's something that their insurance completely covers, and it's not something that I need to worry about, you know? But, yeah, that's the closest I feel like that we came to kind of freaking out, thinking, you know, when they sent us that picture of the tree, like, smashed into their car, I was like, oh no, we're done.
We're sunk.
That's how your emotions can kind of get the best of you in the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I've never, when I look back over 9 years of managing properties that I own and you know, having tenants, I don't have any major horror stories. I do remember, like, there was this one time where a couple wanted to get out of a lease early. And
oh, I remember them.
And, you know, I'm typically completely willing to talk about that, and I don't want to be punitive when someone wants to leave and move somewhere else. And the way they went about it was just really difficult, and it was a little combative, and that's not my personality at all, to get combative. And so that was hard emotionally for me, and I think sometimes That can be, at least for my personality, and that's like the hardest part, is like the
people pleasing side of you. Yeah. The interpersonal side of you is really struggling in the moment, but you're totally fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Legally, you're totally good, but well, it was
And there was a different expectation of what the laws should look like. They were international.
Right.
And
yeah,
so
true.
Where they came from, tenants had a whole lot more leeway to essentially break leases whenever they wanted. And here in the state that we live in, that's just not the case.
Exactly.
And so they just assume some things that weren't quite accurate.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's a great segue, man, because after the break, we're going to talk about state-specific laws and how important it is to know those, as well as other steps that we need to take when it comes to managing rental properties effectively. And so we'll get to all of that right after the break.
All right. We're back from the break. We're talking about managing rental properties, and there is a whole lot that goes into managing a rental property well. Sometimes you got to like step up your emotional fortitude game like I had to back in the day. And I just had to like, all right, no, I'm sticking to my guns and you know, I'm not going to be rude or unkind, but
I am going to have to be okay with these people being mad at me.
Yeah, not liking me. And that was hard, man. That was hard. I don't like it when people don't like me. But another really important thing, though, when you're listing your property and you're talking to tenants, is that you need to make sure you're in compliance with the law. So let's talk about that. In particular, you need to make sure you're obeying the Fair Housing Administration's rules. Don't ask questions that will get you into potential legal trouble. Specifically, under the Act, landlords cannot discriminate against tenants or potential tenants on the basis of race, gender, religion, familial status, disability, or ethnicity. So know this, you got to obey the law, and violating these rules could get you in big, big trouble.
Yeah, not only do you not want to ask those questions when maybe either ahead of time when you're kind of communicating with them before you've met with them or even after you've met them, right? But you want to not list any of those protected classes in the listing for the property, right?
Can't be like, no babies allowed.
Yeah. Well, in particular, familial status. I feel like that's one of the more honest ones, one of the more honest mistakes that we can make, because it's not good if you put in your listing, this is a property that's great for families,
right?
Or
yeah,
this property is perfect for a single professional, like that kind of thing. You have to stay away from family status because that's a protected class. Things like race and religion are obvious, right? Like you're not going to say, hey, this is a great property for a Roman Catholic, or this is a great Muslim neighborhood. Like, no, you can't. That's obvious. You can't do those sort of things. But you got to watch out too when it comes to earlier we talked about painting a picture for what it might look like for someone to live in your house, but you do want to make sure you avoid language that makes it seem like you're trying to steer the listing towards or away from one of those protected classes, for sure.
Yeah, totally. And so, Matt, on the note of knowing your state's laws and rules, I mean, there are obviously federal rules too, right? It's important to familiarize yourself with the nuances of your state's landlord-tenant laws. There are all sorts of little things that can trip you up, but it really depends on what state you live in. So, whichever of the 50 states you live in, it's going to determine some of the ways that you handle that rental property. And there are third-party sites like landlordology.com. We'll put a link to that in our show notes. But they've got comprehensive guides for every state that can be really helpful so that you can know the laws and some of the specifics that need to be in your lease and some of the specific things that you need to communicate to tenants. And at the same time, a lot of states have put together a landlord-tenant handbook. Like our state of Georgia has a great one.
Yeah, we do.
It's like 80 pages long or something like that. I've read the whole thing because there's just so much you need to know as you're getting up to speed. And then I like go back to it.
Just some light toilet reading while you're
right, exactly.
What you're saying there.
Yeah, just a brush up every once in a while. I pull it open while I'm going number two.
Chicken soup for the soul and Georgia landlord handbook.
Exactly. They're both just true joys to read. But yeah, I mean, really, that's something that you do need to bone up on, and it's something that's important to read because it is going to help you be a good landlord. You're going to know some of the rules that you have to abide by, and you want to make sure you're doing everything by the letter of the law, in addition to your own standards of wanting to manage and run a great rental property. You want to also make sure you're in compliance with the law too.
Right. Yeah. So those are the kind of like the first steps for managing well, right? Making sure that you're in compliance with the law, whether it be federal or state. But let's kind of dive into what it looks like, more on the day-to-day basis. And dude, like the best thing that I feel like that we can say when it comes to managing well is just to treat managing these properties or, your property like a business, not a hobby. you definitely want to make sure that you're being professional. That doesn't mean you have to wear a suit and tie. You know, you don't have to dress up or anything. But
I wear a tuxedo personally. But
if you did that, it'd probably weird people out. They're like, what is going on? But I think there are certain expectations that tenants do want to see, you know, like communicating clearly and effectively. And so make sure that you are doing those kind of things. And one of the other things that's important as well is having like a schedule of maintenance for the house, right? We feel that it's important for you personally to check in on that property at least once every single quarter. You know, this is why, like early on, why I insisted on mowing my own lawns at my rental properties. It was just a default way for me to have eyes on what was going on there. Obviously, I was cutting the grass more than once a quarter.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is why having some of these properties close by is also really helpful. It was, you know, part of my strategy. It's part of your strategy as well, Joel, I know. It's not out of my way, you know, to drive by and see how things are looking. But either way, you know, have at least 4 days a year that you schedule for, you know, maintenance, you know, filter changes, checking out the interior, things like that. And on that note, too, it's good to maybe compile a list of contractors, professional contractors, right, who can do some work for you when there's a need that comes up that's something maybe beyond, you know, tightening a little pipe under the sink or changing a light bulb, like things that I can do. And so having that list, even before you need it, is so helpful, because when you find yourself in a situation where something needs to be fixed quickly, a lot of times it's easy to cut corners and you just kind of take the first number that somebody gives you or the first number maybe you even find online. But if you know that, like, oh, I've heard so-and-so has used this guy before, or, oh, I've heard that this HVAC lady is just amazing. Amazing. By the way, you and I both use the same HVAC lady.
She's awesome.
She is amazing. But having these names and numbers and what they do on your phone and easily accessible is so important as well.
Yeah. And Matt, to your point, it's important to have friends or at least have, you know, contacts in the space who also manage properties so that you can share that kind of information. Oh, you've got a great handy person. I've got a great HVAC lady, and you can swap contacts. And, you know, it's not always foolproof, but it's really helpful to know people who know people and to have that ability to share, especially when you need somebody last minute and your person is busy and you got to find somebody else on the fly.
Yeah. You don't have to start from scratch, right? You don't
exactly.
have to reinvent the wheel. It's just, I can quickly check in with you and say, hey, who's that yard guy that you've used before? I've heard you talk about before. I need to finally get his name in my phone and give him a call.
Yeah.
It makes it so easy.
It does. All right. Another really important thing when you're treating your rental properties like a business is that you have to have a clear system for tenant communication. And you have to set clear guidelines as to how your tenants should notify you of any problems with the property. Matt, I made this mistake, a big mistake. Early on when I was managing rental properties, I gave them my cell phone number, my email address. It was they could contact me any way they wanted, whenever they wanted. And it wasn't clear how I preferred to be contacted. And I would respond almost at any point in time if they texted me, like 9 o'clock at night. Hey, Joel, can you take a look at this really minor problem sometime in the next couple of weeks? And I'm responding and like, I'm about to go to bed, man. I don't want that
on
my plate.
It's stressing you out. It's on your mind. You're dreaming about it.
Exactly. And that wasn't good. So I would suggest picking one. Personally, I'm email only at this point. It sucks to get that text message that something's broken in the evening, but I don't mind it nearly as much when it comes across in email form. I feel like I can dismiss that for 24 hours if need be. And create that system and stick to it in order to avoid having to respond in ways that you don't love or that do stress you out. I think at the same time, it's just helpful for your tenants to know, all right, this is the method, how I contact my landlord when something arises. If there's a few different methods, it can get confusing.
Yeah, and over the years, man, I found that what's been really helpful for me is I've set up separate email addresses per property, and I've got this Google Voice number as well that I typically field those initial showings and you know, when those listings are live. And that's because I found that just like that showing and listing time period, right, that it can be so overwhelming because people, I mean, they're emailing you and calling and text, or, you know, trying to call you and text. Like, I've turned off call forwarding, you know, from the Google Voice number, and I'm like, only text. But folks are going to reach out to you at all hours of the day and night to try to make sure that they're able to see that property ASAP. We want to move in, and then you never hear from those people. And so having some of those barriers between you and getting a good night's sleep is important, in particular during those kind of higher stress periods where you're doing a lot of communicating, you're fielding a lot of inquiries. But you know what I found, though, for me personally, is that after that, like once I actually get a tenant in there, I'm very comfortable giving them my, you know, my cell number for them to have my personal email address. And again, in the past 7 years, I've never had a call or a text in the middle of the night where something, you know, where something was wrong. And that's because I too have also communicated to them how I prefer to be contacted about things that are non-emergencies. But you know, granted, if there's something going on that's an emergency, I want them to call me.
Right.
But that being said, knock on wood, that's not something that that I've had to deal with, and it sounds like you haven't either.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think those stories are overblown, and usually, if you have a lot of tenant horror stories in particular, like everybody's bound to get something here or there, right? For sure. But oftentimes that is because there wasn't enough due diligence done on the front end. I think that's almost always where people make the mistake and then they pay for it later on.
Yeah. And real quick too, you know, while we're talking about communication here, I think it's really important to communicate about how rent is to be collected and when it's to be collected, right? And obviously this is, you talked about the lease earlier. This is something that should be very clearly spelled out in the lease. But if your tenants know how it is that they're supposed to pay rent, I feel like that's another one of those points of tension that folks are like, oh, I've heard horror stories about, you know, having to collect rent and what happens if you don't. But again, if that's something that you've clearly communicated with them and that's spelled out in the lease, that's a headache that you can avoid.
Yeah, and make it easy on them. Don't make them drop a check in your mailbox.
How about make it easy for us? Yeah, for yourself.
The easiest thing to do is really the easiest thing for both parties.
Yeah, we all have smartphones and
digital
Venmo
payments. Yeah,
Cash App. It is so easy and so easy to set calendar reminders. Can you even set up automatic payments with Venmo or Cash App?
Not that I know of, but
yeah, I don't know if you can either. But it's so easy to set up a recurring calendar reminder, and just with a few clicks, few swipes of the thumb, and man, you've got that rent paid.
It's true. All right. Well, on the note of getting paid, we need to talk about assessing your property performance every year. Are you making money? Right. And that is an important question to ask if you're managing a rental property. You know, if you had to replace a roof or an HVAC unit this year, maybe your cash flow is down, but hopefully you're setting aside money every month for maintenance anyways, right? If you're regularly going over your budgeted maintenance amount, then it might be time to be a little more realistic with how much you're truly going to make with that property. And there is a chance that if you keep overshooting on maintenance by a good bit, that the actual property just has too many issues and it's not going to be a moneymaker for you. And if that's the case, then it might mean it's time to sell. But there is something about being able to assess every single year, like, how's this property doing for me? And, you know, Emily and I, we get jazzed at the end of the year to talk about, well, how well have these properties performed? How are they doing for our family? Are they still worth the time and energy that we're putting into them for what we're getting out of them? And so that's always a good discussion. Having that performance assessment is crucial, I think, to managing properties well. And it gets me excited to continue managing, knowing that they are actually doing what I've set out for them to achieve, like that they're actually helping our family build wealth and create an alternate income stream.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the primary goal, right? But also, let's talk about software and some of these different platforms out there. You can use these to help you to stay organized and communicate well if you feel that you need to kind of operate within a system. You know, if those boundaries around communication, you know, if you found that those are harder to set, then it might be worth checking out Cozy.co. Cozy Co., we mentioned them earlier, but they are the best all-in-one software that we know of. It is free for landlords and tenants, but they make their money in other ways. You know, like if the tenant chooses to pay rent via credit card, they can do that, but it also charges them a small fee. And they also make their money too on screenings that you would perform through that platform. But, you know, they offer an awesome platform to help you to manage those properties and to communicate with your tenants, you know, take maintenance requests, organize forms, just overall stay organized. And Rent Ready is another platform that's worth looking at. It's that one costs actually $9 a month if you pay a year at a time. And I feel like that one's a little more set up for if you have just a whole massive portfolio of properties. I saw one of the cool things about Rent Ready is that tenants can upload videos to it, you know, and so if there's a maintenance request, they can accompany that request with a video. But again, if you're more of a mom and pop landlord, like Joel and I are, and you just have a handful of properties and you've communicated well with your tenants and they understand you and you understand them, sometimes you can kind of sidestep some of those larger platforms and software as long as you have set those clear communication boundaries with your tenants.
Yeah, and I love that these platforms can offer just like a whole range of help, right? Like your tenant can not only just pay digitally there, which makes it easy for you and for them. They can also submit a maintenance request. You guys can communicate solely through that platform if that's what you want. It's just kind of nice. You just log into the site and like everything that you need to do in order to deal with me and issues with the home is right here.
Right.
And so I think it's nice to be able to have that as a system, really, to help you create that system. It's important to be firm but fair with your tenants, right? Stick to the stuff you've put in the lease.
Yeah, being fair generally is a good rule to abide by in life.
Right, yeah, totally. I think like that is one thing, though, Matt, that tripped me up early on is if something's in the lease, you need to stick to it. And when it comes to like a late payment or something like that, in the beginning, I was pretty mushy about those.
You want to be cool about it. You're like, oh, don't worry about it. You know, you want to be likable. Right.
Exactly. And then I found out that just kind of led to more issues down the road.
Right.
And so, yeah, that being firm up front is important. Obviously, COVID has made interactions with tenants really different these days, right? Late fees are way less rigid right now, considering the circumstances. We've talked about that on the show, how mm-hmm. I've changed the way that I'm interacting with my tenants, the concessions that we've made to try to help them out and keep them in the place that they've been for quite a long time and help keep some stability for them at the same time. But in typical times, sticking to what has been written in your lease is crucial, I think, for a landlord. And the more you deviate away from what you've have in writing and you've both acknowledged and signed your name to, the more likely you are to run into other issues.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not fair to your tenants as well, right? Like if 1 month you were like, oh no, don't worry about the late fee, but then the next month, the very next day after when rent was due, you're kind of hounding them saying, hey, where's rent? I mean, that's not fair. That's not what you're looking for out of a landlord, right? Like you, as a landlord, I want to make sure that my tenants feel like they have somebody who they can count on to provide them safe and clean housing, you know, that at a price that we've agreed to. And so communicating and sticking with those terms, I think, is really important. I like what you said, how those terms are not only for the tenant, but they're also for us as well to make sure that like, well, even though we don't want to abide by these things and everybody in the short term might benefit a little bit by kind of fudging it. It is really important to kind of stick with it because having those clear expectations is pretty vital.
Yeah, I agree. And Matt, we've talked a lot about finding the right tenant. We've talked a lot about establishing good systems to manage a rental property effectively. But when is it time to hire a property manager to do a lot of that managing for you? Well, we'll answer that question right after this break.
All right, man, we are back from the break and we just spent a chunk of time talking about managing properties ourselves. And so let's talk, you know, you hinted at this, but let's talk about when it makes sense to hire a manager. And that is never. Just kidding. We believe that you should at least try to self-manage before you look to hire someone to manage them for you. Like, we feel it's just such a good learning experience that is worth having. And it'll also help you to learn like what questions to ask if you are looking at a potential property manager as well.
Yeah, if you've never managed a property, you're going in the dark. When you're interviewing property managers, you don't really know what to ask them. And so it's just much harder to assess whether you're hiring someone who's going to do a good job or not.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of liken this to at least being willing to like pick up a paintbrush like when you first buy a property, you know? If you aren't willing to maybe put in a little bit of elbow grease at the beginning, then maybe rental property ownership and management, you know, it may not be for you.
Matt, so my mom, she really likes HGTV.
I've heard.
And I remember watching this one episode one time with her, and it was like this couple who wanted to flip a home, and there was like this expert who was helping them along the way, but they didn't want to get their hands dirty at all. They didn't even want to go down in the basement and see some of the issues that existed with the property.
They just showed up with a bunch of money, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, let's be on this show.
Like, you're just going to do it for us, right? And we're going to make money in the end. But that's just a terrible approach when it comes to buying a rental property. Like, you have to be willing to, one, look at the whole house, but then, yeah, get your hands dirty. And I think the same is true when it comes to managing. You have to at least be willing to try it, and you'll learn a lot in those first 6 months. You'll maybe learn that you really want a property manager, or you might learn that it's actually easier than you thought it was.
Right.
But how do you know when you are ready to get a pro and what they normally charge? Well, if you just don't want managing to be a part of your life, you're one of those people who says, I like real estate, but I don't want to manage it. I think that's an okay way to approach it. But just know that you're not going to find anyone else who will care for your property as much as you do. The little things that I see that I can improve on the properties that I own. Well, somebody who's managing the property, someone who's just getting paid to essentially fix things when they break, isn't necessarily looking for those cool, inexpensive improvements that you can do along the way that'll make tenants happier or potentially even be able to get you more rent. That's what I mean by you essentially being the one who's going to care about that property the most. But if you are one of those people who knows you want to invest in real estate, but you also want to have a property manager, make sure to factor in those costs when running the numbers on a property. Matt and I were fans of people factoring in the potential costs of a property manager into the numbers just in case, no matter what. But if it's a non-negotiable, then you have to have it in there.
Right.
And it will cost you, eat into some of those profits by you paying someone else to take on the role of managing the property. It's going to cost you money.
Yeah, and you know, cost, it truly is like the biggest consideration, and that's something that we will get to, but we'll get to that here in a little bit. Joel, I'm thinking through how, even though I've purposely purchased properties, you know, nearby and created systems that make them easier to manage, like I've still considered hiring a property manager recently. Life and having a bunch of kids, like life gets busy, and so I want to continue to own these homes, but I get less excited by the management aspects, you know, over time. I think that's a large part of why I haven't necessarily looked to expanding the number of properties I have, because I'm like, you know what, like the ones I have right now are manageable and I like the level of my involvement. But I know that, like, man, if I'm going to get a bunch more properties, I don't want to say it's a full-time job, but it's going to certainly require a lot more of your time. And that's something I'm kind of short on at the moment. And I'm also stuck in this hard place though too, because I'm also not quite yet willing to pay for someone to manage my properties. And so that's why at the moment, yeah, I'm not looking to expand that real estate portfolio.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, if I got a couple more, I definitely got to find some help.
Right.
I can't do it myself anymore. But I think another reason that people turn to property managers that makes sense is if they're considering long distance ownership of a property. Because managing a physical property from hundreds and hundreds or thousands of miles away, it makes it incredibly hard. So if you're moving, but you still want to own that property that you own that's nearby, hiring a manager makes a whole lot of sense. Unless the person renting your property is someone you know closely, having a local property manager, I think, becomes essential when you're not living close by in order to be able to manage it personally. And even if it is someone you know, you still have to manage it. And that's just hard to do from far away.
Right. I mean, I'm thinking too of maybe another reason why it might be good to have a manager. I think it was 5 a.m. Joel. You remember our interview with him?
I do.
And I think it was him. He shared this story about how he had gone in to talk, you know, with his tenants that he's had about, you know, the next year. And he kind of like showed up with the lease and how, you know, and rent was also going to be going up. But he left that conversation with a signed lease, but rent went down. And he readily admitted that, you know what? I am a terrible landlord. This is a
pushover.
Yeah, this isn't something that I'm good at. And so I think it's important too to know your strengths. If you know that even though, you know, the lease spells out these certain things, it still comes down to you as an individual to enforce it. And if you know that that's not something that you want to spend your time doing, or maybe it's something that you're not that great at, I think having a manager to kind of, you know, be your go-between and to enforce those policies and those rules for you, that might be something that's worth the money as well.
Yeah, or if managing that property is going to get you emotionally tied up into knots consistently,
yes,
every time a problem comes up, which is something that I struggle with, to be honest, and it's something that I've gotten better with over time. But for me, that would be one of the reasons to potentially consider a property manager as opposed to doing it myself.
But that's also what makes you a decent human being, Joel.
Yeah, maybe. So some might disagree.
Not everybody can be cold-hearted robots like I am.
All right, well, let's talk about how to find a decent human being for a rental property manager. And like, if you do want to hire a service to manage those properties for you, there's a good way to go about it. The best way, I think, or one of the best ways, is to hire a company that investor friends have had positive experiences with over the years. Again, it's another reason why it's crucial to have a network of investor friends, right? Joining a local real estate group in your community can help connect you to lots of people that can help you in your investing endeavors, including potential property managers. Matt, one of my investor friends, he also manages properties.
Who's not me.
Right, who's not you. And I know him incredibly well now, and I understand how he manages his properties. So if I do get to the point, and I get closer and closer every year, where I want to hire someone to manage the properties for me, he's going to be the first place I turn, because you know I know him well. I know how he manages his properties, and I feel comfortable. I would feel totally comfortable having him manage mine. But those are the kind of things you learn through a network of people over time.
Right. Yeah. But if you happen to not know somebody who is, you know, also a property manager, you can definitely check online and read reviews just like we do for anything else we do in our life. Right. You can go to All Property Management. That's a great site to find local property managers. And you can request a quote for their services online. It's super easy. But then beyond that, make sure that you actually interview a few different property managers to get a feel for you know what it is they offer and how they differentiate themselves from any old standard property manager. Like we were saying earlier, you want to be firm, but at the same time, you do want to be fair. And that's kind of it can be a difficult balance to strike. As individuals, it's something that we can do ourselves. But finding someone else who can do a good job taking care of your tenants like that, it can be a little more difficult. So make sure that you don't just go with the first quote that you receive back in your inbox. You know?
Yeah. And then ask the right questions, right? Of the companies that you're talking to. Interview three or four potential property management companies. Ask questions like, where do you advertise for potential tenants? If they say, oh, just Craigslist or just a sign in the yard, I mean, you know, that might have been cool
Craigslist
15 years ago.
The worst.
But it doesn't cut it anymore. Also ask stuff like, what's your overall vacancy rate? You'll realize, too, that that's an important question, because if they're not keeping tenants happy, tenants are going to move out a whole lot more quickly. Or if they're not doing a good job filling a vacant apartment, their vacancy rates are going to be higher. That means they're not doing a good job listing the property and finding qualified people to live in it. And you can even ask to speak to tenants that they manage and ask that tenant about how they respond to maintenance requests and what their communication style is like. Those are the kind of things that are going to help you determine whether or not a rental property manager is going to be a good fit for you or not.
And then lastly, as you are searching for a manager, make sure that you read through whatever agreement that they send your way, that you read through that pretty thoroughly. You know, you want to make sure that you know the scope of the services that they're going to provide you. You don't want to just focus on going with the lowest price. You get what you pay for. And so, Joel, while we're talking about price and cost, right? Let's talk about what most property managers charge. And what they typically do is they charge half or a full first month's rent when a new tenant moves in. And then in addition to that, typically they will charge anywhere between 7 and 12% of the monthly rent. You know, they might even charge a setup fee up front. Some property managers opt for a flat fee instead of a percentage of the rent. So oftentimes, though, these fees they're not set in stone. These are things that you can negotiate some.
Yeah, I think those are some good ballpark numbers. And those are the kind of things, yeah, you can push back on and say, well, your competitor charges this. Well, why do you charge this much? And they might say, our services are better. Here's what we're doing. Right. Here's additionally what you're getting if you hire us instead of the other guy. This is a place, though, where when we talk about frugal or cheap, Matt, you don't want to go cheap when you're talking about someone who's taking care of, in all likelihood, one of the biggest investments that you've ever made in your life,
right?
Having a rental property. You want someone who is going to care for it the way you do. And if that means an extra 1% or 2% of the rent every single month is going towards someone who is going to do just a fantastic job and manage your place the way you would, then I think it's worth it. Don't cheap out when you're hiring a rental property manager, and kind of know the ballpark, know when you can push back, and know when you can negotiate. But ultimately, you want to find someone who is going to do a killer job, not someone who's just going to do like an average job.
Right. But here's the thing, though. In the end, the cost of property managers, like, that is what is keeping you and I from, you know, jumping on the property manager train. You know, like, I mean, that's for you, I'm guessing that's probably your biggest consideration. Like, that's the biggest thing that you have issue with, is that so
much. If they
much,
were free, I'd do it tomorrow.
Yeah, why not? Exactly. If you had somebody who's going to do a great job for you and is going to be completely free, pro bono, why not? But when it costs, you know, 10% of your rent, that could easily be 20% of your profit, right? So say, you know, you've got a mortgage that's $1,000 and it's a property that you can rent out for maybe $2,000. If they're collecting $200 every single month and your profits are $1,000 and you're only left with $800. I mean, 20% is a huge stinking fee. You know?
And often the numbers are worse than that for most
sometimes,
landlords.
Yeah. That's so, a generous picture I just painted there.
It could be 30-40% of the profits are getting it eaten into by hiring someone to manage for you. So you have to know, here's what the typical costs are, I agree. And then also, well, is it worth it or not? Because it completely changes the dynamics of how profitable that rental property is.
Yeah, and here's the other thing too. I think a lot of times folks will think that, oh, if I have a property manager, it alleviates some of the stress of when things are coming up, repairs that need to be made, but you're still on the hook for those repairs, right? You're just not necessarily the one who's choosing the maybe even the best vendor, the best company to do the job. Instead, you're just told that this is how much it costs. And so I know, at least for me personally, I could see myself getting frustrated because I'm like, well, did they go with like someone who's doing really good work or somebody who just advertises a lot and their name is around town? I think this is an instance where maybe being a slightly more proactive landlord, how that can eliminate a lot of headaches, right? If you're kind of leaning into problems before they even become problems, right? Instead of just ignoring them and sweeping them under the rug. Because you know what? Eventually, you're going to have to deal with those issues. You're going to have to deal with those maintenance requests. You're going to have to make those repairs. And it's good to handle those right away. And don't think that just having a property manager takes you off the hook, because guess what? You are still responsible for those repairs. It's just that now there's a lot of other things that aren't in your control.
Yeah. And Matt, another factor when you're talking about whether a property manager is worth the cost or not, the most recent rental property that I purchased a couple years back, well, the rent that the property management agency was asking was way under the market value.
Right.
And so they didn't think the home was worth as much as it was. I got a pretty decent deal. And ultimately, over the years, have been able to raise the rent to market rates. And if I had a property manager who was like, no, we're only going to ask this much for your place, and they're undervaluing it. That's
how our vacancy rate's so low, because our rents are so low.
Exactly.
Right.
That's another thing you have to watch out for. So there are all these little things that can eat into the profits. And again, not denigrating property managers. There are some great ones out there. And at some point, I might go with in that direction. But for the diligent landlord who is managing rental properties effectively, we think most of the time they don't need a property manager. They're going to be more profitable. Their home is going to be kept in even better condition. And it really won't be all that draining being a landlord if you're managing the properties you own effectively.
That's right, man. Yeah, I could not agree anymore. Let's go ahead now, get back to the beer. This episode, you and I were drinking a Basement Pog IPA. This is by Scofflaw Brewing Company here in Atlanta. Actually, we recently had a Pog beer on the episode where it's an IPA with passion fruit, orange, and guava. Yeah, man, what were your thoughts on this beer?
Again, dude, this is a tropical punch beer, man. This had all of this like island Caribbean sort of fruit flavor going on, and it was like abrasive in the best way. I thought it was like a West Coast style Pog. I thought it had like some of the bitterness from the hops along with the juiciness from the fruits that were in the beer.
Yeah, I felt this one was pretty heavy on the PO and less on the G. I felt like it had a little bit less of that guava, but I felt like I was tasting a lot of the passion fruit, a lot of the orange.
A lot of orange.
I felt like it almost seemed like there was a layer of like orange essential oils like floating on the top of the beer like as you were to kind of sip it back. But yeah, man, I am glad that you and I got to enjoy this one. This was kind of nice too for a nice fall day like today. It's been a while since I've had a Scofflaw beer, but I'm glad they're back on my radar now. And it's maybe a brewery that, yeah, you and I need to hit up soon, dude. Well, cool, buddy. That's going to be it for this episode. Listeners can find our show notes up on our website at howtomoney.com. We'll be sure to link to any of the different resources for you if you do happen to start managing a property yourself.
Which we would encourage you to do.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah, we think for so many people, investing in a rental property can be just a fantastic vehicle to long-term wealth building. And also, Matt, I just want to say thanks to everybody who listens consistently to the show. We really appreciate it. If you get the chance, if you haven't left a review, we'd appreciate that too, especially at Apple Podcasts. It just goes a long way to helping other people find the show, find information that they can use to help them in their everyday lives when it comes to money. All right, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.